He said no. A definite, emphatic no. The Lord had said to Pharaoh, Israel is my son, my firstborn. Let my son go that he may serve me. And Pharaoh said, no. And as a result, Pharaoh and his hosts perished in the Red Sea. And the principle was thereby established that freedom was a God-given right of his people. Whatever bondage would face them in their future, there would be liberation, there would be release, there would be liberty from that bondage. God himself directed that they were his people, and they should be free to serve him. And the whole spirit of it is there in that verse 17 of Leviticus 25. Ye shall not therefore oppress one another. Oppression was not to be for the people of God. But oppression came not only from outside Israel. It came also from within. Through poverty, some of them had to sell their land and even themselves to eke out a living. We remember how Israel went into the land, and the land was divided into the various tribes, and each tribe divided the land into various families, and each family had their portion of Abram's covenanted land. It was their visible portion of the covenant, and no one could take it from them. But perhaps through what? Bad harvest? Bad husbandry? Or whatever. Some of them had to lose that land. They had to sell it to obtain a living for themselves and their families, to eke out an existence. Some of them had to sell themselves into slavery, or to bondage at least, to their brethren, to the more rich brethren in the land. And so they were brought very low. But all was not lost under the law. That was the beauty of living under the law of Moses. Built into the law were safeguards. Safeguards to prevent oppression. First of all, each week, as we know, one day was set aside. Here's the whole basis of it. One day was set aside each week for his freedom. The freedom of the one, of the many, who went into slavery. Chapter 23 of Leviticus and verse 1. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, say unto them concerning the feasts of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation. Ye shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. One day in the seventh. The word work there means by deputizing or delegation. No man could be a Pharaoh in Israel to his brethren. No man could say to his brother on the Sabbath day, do this, and he had to do it. There was to be no Pharaoh in Israel. In other words, the Lord was saying to the, can we say, the rich brethren, let my son go, that he may serve me. And so this one day in seven was set aside, and the Sabbath was to be holy. Not that it was a day of idleness, not a day of idleness at all. Each Israelite would sit in the door of his tent, and he would meditate, as we read in Exodus chapter 20, how the Lord had created the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh. So he himself now had worked 6 days, and now he was resting himself on the seventh. Whilst perhaps the more wealthy brother, under the spirit of Deuteronomy chapter 5, he would also meditate in his tent door on the Sabbath day and think how the Lord had delivered him from bondage in Egypt And now it was his duty to deliver his brother from bondage. And so their minds would be filled of the way in the ways of the Lord. It was a day not of idleness, but a day of meditation on the things of God. And as we know, the Sabbath was designed to teach Israel that every day should be like that. Every day their mind should dwell on the things of the Lord. Unfortunately, it didn't happen that way, did it? But that's another story, really. All of them were made to realise that their great need was release. Release. Liberty. Deliverance. 6 days they toiled. One day they rested. Work first, then they ceased from the works of the flesh and meditated on the things of the Lord. Back in Exodus chapter 31, we get the spirit of it there. Exodus 31 and verse 13. Speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbath ye shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generation, a witness between me and you throughout your generations, that ye may know that I am the Lord that doth sanctify you. See the nature of it, that the Lord, that Israel might know. That Israel might know that I am the Lord that doth sanctify you. As he set them apart, they were holy unto him. They had to be holy. Verse 14, Ye shall keep the Sabbath therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defileth it shall surely be put to death. It was defiling the holiness that God was calling them unto. They had to keep the Sabbath to be holy. They had to keep it holy. They had to be holy with it. If the day was not holy to them, then they were guilty of rejecting the calling and the responsibilities that went with that calling. Whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. The Lord was holy. They had to be holy. And the Lord through this day is teaching them holiness. And so verse 17 says, It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. The word means rebreathed or enriched. He was enriched in what he saw. The angels and the work of their hands were enriched with what they saw. Not that they were tired, in the sense that we get tired, but they were enriched in the things that they had done. And so Israel were to be the same. And so verse 23 of Exodus and verse 12, he says, 6 days thou shalt do thy work. 23 verse 12, 6 days thou shalt do thy work, on the seventh day thou shalt rest, that thine ox and thine ass may rest, and the son of thine handmaid and the stranger may be refreshed. It wasn't something that he was to hug to himself, but as God had been refreshed, the angels had been refreshed, so they were refreshed, and so they were to see that their servants also were equally refreshed. It was shared between them. You know, it would require a certain amount of self-discipline, that would, wouldn't it? You think about that. To break away from the daily routine and the grasping of the daily routine, much of it necessary. The milking of the cows, the feeding of the animals, it had to be performed, someone had to do it, so the landowner presumably would have to do it himself. Certain work would have to be done, but no Pharaoh could say to the servants, you do it. It was a day of refreshing for the people. The works of the flesh had to be put on one side, and they would be re-energized by the Sabbath. Was a man wealthy? He had to forget his wealth on that day. Was a man poor? He had to forget his poverty and think. that the Lord had created the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh, or that they had been bondmen in the land of Egypt and the Lord had redeemed them, and therefore they were to redeem, in that sense, their brethren who were slaves to them. So it was a time of putting off the yoke of the flesh. It was a day of rest, a day of holiness to the Lord. But the next day came. That day passed, and the next day came, and it was the first day of another cycle. They were back to square one. There was no lasting rest. They were back to square one. They were back to reality and the harshness of the reality and the harshness of their servitude. There was no end to that. There was an end, rather, to that Sabbath. There was no end to the slavery. The simple reason was, of course, that sin was still present. The law could not redeem them completely. Would that lasting rest, that lasting release, ever come? Well, yes. Yes. Looming on the horizon was a sabbatical year. The seventh year. They worked 6 years, and then the seventh year was a year of release, a year of rest. Deuteronomy chapter 15. They could look forward, the Sabbath every week. They could, in that Sabbath, they looked forward to this sabbatical year when they would work the 6 years and then rest in the seventh year. Now see what they had to do. Deuteronomy 15, verse 12. If thy brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, be sold unto thee and serve thee 6 years, then in the seventh year thou shalt let him go free from thee. So here is then a release. They can look forward to a release. A sense of liberty would perhaps steal over them. That eventually there was a time coming when there would be freedom from the bondage into which they had been forced. And you see the implication here is on the rich brother, that he was to let that servant go free from thee. And that bond slave was to be let free with love. They had to share what they had, the rich and the poor. They had to share a concern, compassion had to be exercised. There was to be no oppression, and they all had their part to play. The love is seen in verse 13. When thou sendest him out free from thee, thou shalt not let him go away empty. The onus is on the rich brother's shoulders, not on the poor brother to go to the rich one and say, look, I'm in poverty, I need help. The onus is on the shoulders of the rich brother to go to the poor brother and send him away free, quite free, but he is not to allow him to go away empty. Verse 14, thou shalt furnish him liberally out of thy flock, and out of thy floor, and out of thy winepress, of that wherewith the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, thou shalt give unto him. Now you know, the landowner really was only giving back what the Lord had given him, because in the seventh year there was an abundance, an absolute abundance of harvest. The sixth year was a year of blessing. In this cycle of 7 years, the sixth year was a year of abundance. The Lord blessed them. Leviticus chapter 25. We'll come back to Deuteronomy 15 in a moment. Leviticus 25. Chapter we read. The Lord spake to Moses, verse 1. Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. 6 years thou shalt sow thy field, and 6 years thou shalt prune thy vineyard, and gather in the fruit thereof. But In the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy field nor prune thy vineyard. The sixth year then was to be a year of plenty. Now verse 20, if ye shall say, what shall we eat the seventh year? Behold, we shall not sow nor gather in our increase. Then I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And ye shall sow the eighth year, and eat yet of old fruit until the ninth year. Until her fruits come in, ye shall eat of the old store. In other words, then they would sow in the sixth year, and the ingathering for that sixth year would last them to the end of the sixth year, throughout the seventh year, and into the eighth year, until the sowings of the eighth year came in, which would almost be the ninth year. You think of the blessing of that. You know, we often say that the seventh year was to leave the land fallow, to regain its strength. I don't think it is at all. The Lord was blessing Israel. The curse was upon the land, but the curse was in effect being made inoperative as far as Israel was concerned, because the Lord was blessing the land so that it brought forth fruit for 3 years. And out of that abundance of store, the rich brother could give abundantly to the poor brethren. But again, you see, it requires faith, doesn't it? It requires faith. A total reliance on the Lord. You know, we have to look at ourselves sometimes in these things, don't we? In Malachi's day, Malachi chapter 3, the Lord reprimanded Israel in the days of Malachi. They were faithless, a faithless people. We know the story of Israel, how they went away, went astray. As he says in verse 7, chapter 3, verse 7, even from the days of your fathers ye are gone away from mine ordinances. Oh yes, they let them all slip, didn't they? Verse 8, will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there be not room enough to receive it. So he was pouring out the blessings upon them. And that was the sixth year. And the seventh year, the blessing was upon the land in the sixth year, and the land was blessed and brought forth fruit plentifully. And it would was designed to stimulate their faith. But, well, there's always a but, isn't there? There's a danger, isn't there? There's a danger when there is an abundance, a danger for the flesh to think, I will pull down my barns and build greater. Instead of sharing, instead of giving, pull down the barns and build greater and hug it all to myself. It's a fact, isn't it? It's the greed of the flesh. But that overflowing produce of the sixth year was a sign of God's blessing on his people. And that blessing had got to be shared, not stored for personal use. It had to be shared amongst all those who had need. Go back now to Deuteronomy 15 and verse 14. And now we have the command, yeah, not to let them go away empty. The onus, as we've said, is on the rich brother's shoulders to have compassion and concern for the poor brother who he is sending away from him freely. Verse 14, thou shalt furnish him liberally out of thy flock, out of thy floor, and out of thy winepress, of that wherewith the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, thou shalt give unto him. And here's the rich brother with his barns full. Full to bursting, and the land still producing. And God is saying, out of all that abundance, give. But he doesn't specify. You notice that? He doesn't say you will give so many of the flock and so much of the wheat and the wine press. He leaves it to the individual. He leaves it to the individual to show what their idea of liberality is. What's your idea of liberality? Who do you think gave the most in the scriptures? Who gave the most in the scriptures? You think of all the people who gave. Who gave the most? David? Remember David, and he gave gold, silver, and all the wonderful things for the temple that Solomon was going to build. Well, think of all that Solomon himself gave for the building of the temple. I wonder if they are the greatest givers in the scriptures. There is one who gave everything. And that's in Luke 21. We needn't look at it at the moment, but Jesus there saw a widow woman at the temple, and she put into the box two mites. That's all she put in. And Jesus said that she gave more than all the Pharisees who were giving of their abundance, because she put in all the living that she had. All the living that she had. All of it. When she turned away from the temple, she was destitute. David wasn't. Solomon wasn't. I'll put it to you, neither you and I. She gave everything that she got. Now that is liberality. That's giving liberally. And the Lord loves a cheerful giver, you know. Now, the rich brother here then is to think how the Lord has blessed him, and he is to give as he is moved. That wherewith the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, thou shalt give unto him. And verse 15, thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee. You were in a worse state than your poor brother. And now I am commanding you this thing today, that you give as I have given you. And that's the overriding principle of it all. But there's more than that. Back in verse 1, chapter 15, thou shalt release all debts as well. At the end of every 7 years thou shalt make a release, and this is the manner of release. Every creditor that lendeth aught unto his neighbour shall release it. He shall not exact it of his neighbour or of his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. Of a foreigner thou mayest exact it again, but that which is thine with thy brother thine hand shall release it. So in this seventh year, very important year, this seventh year, a very important year in the spiritual development of the faithful Israelite. In this seventh year, they are to let all the debts go. If a brother can't afford to pay back, forget it. They could afford to forget it. The land was still producing. All that they needed was there. They couldn't gather enough. The barns were full. They weren't losing anything. They were to let it go. You see the spiritual development of these people. To be godlike. As he had given them freely, so they were to give to their brethren exactly the same. But notice verse 4. The margin renders it to the end that there be no poor among you. To the end, that's the purpose, the whole purpose of it, that there should be no poor in Israel. They should all be equal, they should all be one in Israel. Now that's true liberty and liberality, isn't it? Verse 7, if there be among you a poor man of one of thy brethren within any of the gates of thy land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother, but thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him, and shalt surely lend him sufficient for his need in that which he wanteth. Lend it to him. But don't expect it back. That was the spirit of it. Lend it, but don't expect to receive it back. The same God, you see, that would say, vengeance is mine, I will repay, was already repaying them in kind for the goodness that they would do. He was filling their barns, the land was producing. Thou shalt open thine hand wide. Keep a finger there for a moment and just turn to Isaiah 59. Isaiah 59. Now we've moved on, as we know, many years in the history of Israel. And we have here a contrast between God and the people. God first. Chapter 59, verse 1. Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save. You see, his hand was stretched out still. Thou shalt open thine hand wide. God was doing that. His hand was not shortened. It was not drawn back. That it, neither is ear heavy that he cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you that he will not hear. Like the Garden of Eden all over again, isn't it? Their sins, Adam and Eve, separated them from their God also. But the Lord's hand was stretched out even then, in saying that the seed of the woman would take away the work of the seed of the serpent. So the Lord's hand was not shortened, it was stretched out still to give. Back in chapter 58 of Isaiah, he says, verse 3, wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Verse 4, behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. The fist is the hand drawn back, isn't it? See, the Lord's hand was stretched out, but the fist is drawn back. A hand drawn back. A hand that can do nothing, cannot give, cannot receive. But the Lord's hand was stretched out still. And so back in Deuteronomy, they're supposed now to be doing that, extending their hand. In verse 8, thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him. You see, they were not to despise, they were to love. They were not to oppress, they were to pity, they were not to take, they were to give. They were not to begrudge, they were to be generous, and the Lord would bless them. And was blessing them. He blessed them in advance. He blessed them in the sixth year so that they could do all these good things in the seventh year. See, God and man were working together, blessing the poor brother. God and man working together. They all had their part to play. Verse 9, Deuteronomy 15. Beware that there be not a thought in thy wicked heart. You see, he doesn't say you will develop a wicked heart. You've already got that. Beware that they be not in the thought in thy wicked heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand, and I be evil against thy poor brother, and thou givest him naught, and he cry unto the Lord against thee, and it be sin unto thee. No thought of holding back, not drawing back the hand into the fist, but opening the hand wide and giving it. And so the Lord laid down these laws for the people to extend and to spread this wealth, this amazing wealth that he had bestowed upon the nation, and they would share it between themselves if they followed the commandments of the Lord. And you know, that seventh year ended in a marvellous way. Chapter 31 of Deuteronomy. You see, each year they kept the Feast of Tabernacles till, as it were, this was the time of ingathering, wasn't it? The time of the harvest, the giving of thanks, and the harvest. But of course, the seventh year was a continuation of the harvest of the sixth year. And so it was really a year of thanksgiving. Not just a small feast, but a year of thanksgiving. And that seventh year then ended, Deuteronomy 31, verse 10, Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, in the solemnity of the year of release, in the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel is come to appear before the Lord thy God, in the place which he shall choose, thou shalt read this law before all Israel in their hearing. They read the law. Is there any finer way of finishing and completing the cycle of the seventh? Reading the law. Gather the people together, men and women and children. The whole family was there. It was a family affair. Men and women and children, and thy stranger that is within thy gates, that they may hear, and that they may learn and fear the Lord your God, and observe to do all the words of this law, that their children, which have not known anything, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, as long as ye live in the land whither ye go over Jordan to possess it. You see the basis, don't you, of a sound family life there? Reading together, learning together, praying together. The basis of a sound family life. And here it is, in the end of the 70th, so they all came together to hear this law read. Very impressive it would be indeed. Very impressive. And impressed on the minds of the children particularly. I suppose the slave as well would listen to that, wouldn't he? He'd just been released. He'd just been released and he was now free to go. He couldn't go back to his land. The land was still tied up. But he was now free to go. He could be a hired servant, a free servant, if you like, as distinct from the bond slave. But he'd listen to the law being read, I'm sure. I guess we would as well. It was Josiah, wasn't it, who revived the reading of the law. It's as though he catches the spirit. 2 Kings chapter 23 it is. He catches the spirit of the seventh year, does Josiah. He's releasing the people from the service to Baal. That's the release that he... I don't know whether it is a seventh year. There's no evidence that it was, but he catches the spirit of it. And sure, that's more important, isn't it? The spirit of the principle of it. He gathers the people together. They've just found the book of the law. It's been lost. And now they suddenly find this book of the law. Verse 2 of chapter 23, the king went up unto the house of the Lord, and all the men of Judah and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem with him, and the priests and the prophets and all the people, both small and great. And he read in their ears all the words of the book of the covenant which was found in the house of the Lord. He catches the spirit of that seventh year. They're having a new start. They're starting afresh. It's going to be a new time for a new start for Israel. And so that seventh year would be eagerly waited for. Now think of yourself now as a bond slave. You have every Sabbath day free, but then the next week starts and you go another Sabbath, then another Sabbath, and so on. All the time you're looking forward to this seventh year that's looming on the horizon. The fourth year goes by, the fifth year goes by, the sixth year of abundance goes by, and the seventh year comes and you're free. You're free to go. You're released. But it passes. The seventh year passed. And you find yourself back in square one. Bad harvests, poor husbandry, be what it is. You're back in square one. And before you know where you are, you could easily be back into slavery again. See, it's like waiting for the release that comes, but doesn't last. It's pointing forward to something greater. The Sabbath day had pointed forward, in effect, to this seventh year of release. And now the seventh year of release is pointing forward again to something else that's got to come. And that is, of course, the Jubilee. the Jubilee itself. Back to Leviticus 25. So verse 8, Leviticus 25. And thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years. So each one of these blocks of 7, the 7-year cycle, now is a cycle in itself, but now we have to count 7 of those cycles. Thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years unto thee, 7 times 7 years, and the space of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. It's very emphatic, that is, isn't it? It's 49 years, it says. In case you can't do your mathematics, it's very emphatic. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. And that's a very definite date. So you've got 7 cycles of 7 years. You come up to the 49th year. And then on the 10th day, I know some might not agree with me on this, but never mind. On the 10th day of the 7th month of the 49th year, the trumpet sounds. The trumpet of the Jubilee sounds. And then the 50th year begins. You see, I believe the 50th year is not the year between the 49th and the 1st, but the 50th year goes from the 10th day of the 7th month, very emphatic date, you can't get around that verse. It's the 10th day of the 7th month of the 49th year, and it stretches into the first year of the new cycle. That's how I see it. You might not agree, but it doesn't concern us really this evening. But there it is. On the 10th day of the 7th month, in the Day of Atonement, shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. Now that Day of Atonement, as you're very well aware, I know, was the most important day in Israel's history. The day when sins were forgiven. Now there's the release. That's the release, isn't it, that we look forward to. The forgiveness of sins. When all the nation stood before the Lord and offerings were made. In particular, the 2 goats were taken. Remember how the 2 goats were taken. One was slain and the other one as the scapegoat. And the hands of the high priest put upon its head, and then was sent out, as it says in Leviticus 16, as the scapegoat, and it took away and made atonement for the sins of the people. And so with the blood of the one goat sprinkled upon the mercy seat, and the other goat sent away, carrying, as it were, the sins of the people, all representing, of course, the work of the Lord Jesus Christ, then the high priest came forth in the presence of the Lord, and he blessed the people. You know, the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up the light of his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. And that happened every year. But I would suggest, there's no evidence for this, but I would suggest that it is at that moment when the high priest, the sins have gone, all the people stand now, we might almost say pure, before the Lord. The sins are all forgiven. And the high priest has blessed the people. It is then that the trumpet, I would suggest, the trumpet of the Jubilee sounds. And the people really have looked forward to this. They've gone through 6 days and a 7th of rest, 6 days and so on. They've gone through 6 years of work and 1 year of rest, 7 times. And now they come to the end of the cycle, the 50th year. It must have been a wonderful time for them. A time of great rejoicing, as the word implies. We will see that in the second address. The trumpet of the Jubilee sounded. And the people now were free. Not only free from their slavery, but their lands were free. They could go back to the land. They may have lost that land 40 years ago. But now at last, maybe the one who lost it is dying in the process. But now his son has grown up and he comes and he can repossess that land. That visible portion of Abram's covenant, covenanted land, it is his. No one can take it from him again. he goes back to that land. Return, O happy Israel, home. Verse 10. Ye shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you. Ye shall return every man unto his possession. Ye shall return every man unto his family. Oh, how they'd look forward to that. Put yourself in that situation. Oh, we should look forward to it, wouldn't we? The thought that once again there was a spot to which our families could go. No longer, we don't understand what slavery is, do we, today? We've all got our little homes, our pieces of land where we live. They hadn't been. They were slaves. But now they could go back. Verse 11. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. Ye shall not sow, neither reap, and so forth and so on. Verse 12. It is the jubilee, it shall be holy unto you. In the year of this jubilee ye shall return every man unto his possession. Well, did the rich man occupy his brother's land? He got to let it go. Couldn't hold on to it any longer. He must let it go. This is complete liberty, isn't it? Man, family, and possession. All reunited. That's what the jubilee was. A reuniting of family. So the echoes of those horns then, when the trumpet of the jubilee sounded, the echoes of those horns spoke of liberty. Liberty. Sins forgiven. Freedom for slaves. Reuniting of families. A cancelling of debts. And a restoration to the land. Yes, we can imagine ourselves in that situation, can't we? Israel now were back to their original state. And the all-sufficient reason is there at the end of verse 17. For I am the Lord your God. The all-sufficient reason. No point in discussing the matter or arguing the matter. I am the Lord your God. He commanded it so. And Israel had to be obedient. And yet despite this, you know, there's very few references to either the seventh year or the jubilee in Scripture. One possibility is found in Isaiah 37 in the days of Hezekiah. Hezekiah, that faithful king, wonderful type of the Lord Jesus Christ. Isaiah 37, you've got Hezekiah and Jerusalem here surrounded by Assyria. Many of the people have been taken captive from the cities around, named slaves. And Jerusalem itself is shut up like a prison. None could go in, none could go out. Many of the people would be distressed, broken hearted. No doubt that they'd lost their families. Their sons, their husbands, their fathers had been taken captive. They'd be broken hearted, wouldn't they? The families had been uprooted. And Hezekiah prays before the Lord. Verse 14 of Isaiah 37. Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers and read it. Hezekiah went up into the house of the Lord, spread it before the Lord, and Hezekiah prayed unto the Lord, saying, O Lord of hosts, God of Israel, that dwellest between the cherubim, thou art the God, even thou alone of all the kingdoms of the earth. Thou hast made heaven and earth, and so forth and so on. The answer comes. Oh, he says, verse 20, Now therefore, O Lord our God, save us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou art the Lord, even thou only. That's the plea of Hezekiah. And the answer comes in verse 30. The Lord answers him in this way. He says, This shall be a sign unto thee. Ye shall eat this year such as groweth of itself, and the second year that which springeth of the same, and in the third year sow ye and reap and plant vineyards and eat the fruit thereof. In other words, there's going to be 3 years. 3 years harvest. This year, next year, and the beginning of the year after. Just an implication that that could have been a jubilee year. Just an influence. Certainly, Zedekiah, that wicked king, He and his contemporaries in Jeremiah 34 seek help of the Lord by trying to catch hold of the spirit of the seventh year. Jeremiah 34. They're seeking to catch hold of the spirit, so that of the jubilee or the seventh year, so that the Lord will work with them. Verse 8. This is the word that came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, after that the king Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people which were at Jerusalem to proclaim liberty unto them. That's the phrase lifted from the Jubilee in Leviticus 25. That every man should let his manservant and every man his maidservant, being a Hebrew or a Hebrewess, go free. That's Deuteronomy 15, which is speaking of the seventh year. That none should serve himself of them, to wit, of a Jew, his brother. Now, when all the people which had entered into the covenant heard that everyone should let his manservant and everyone his maidservant go free, that none should serve themselves of them any more, then they obeyed and let them go. So they catch hold of the spirit of that year of release. They let the servants go so that they can be delivered from Nebuchadnezzar, who is again surrounding the city. And the amazing thing is, Nebuchadnezzar goes away. And they think it's a success. Nebuchadnezzar moves away. The problem is, of course, Pharaoh is attacked from the south. And he draws his army away to deal with Pharaoh, and he comes back. But in the meantime, these wicked men think that their ploy has succeeded, that the Lord's answered them. Verse 11, afterward they turned and caused the servants and the handmaidens whom they let go free to return, and brought them into subjection for servants and for handmaids. When they thought they were successful, they fetched them back into slavery. You see, the hand was drawn back into the fist of wickedness. They stretched out the hand for a moment, but they soon drew it back. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar came back, and they suffered for it. But that is the one occasion when they tried to catch hold of the spirit of it. Verse 17 says, therefore thus saith the Lord, ye have not hearkened unto me in proclaiming liberty, every one to his brother and every man to his neighbour. Behold, I proclaim a liberty for you, saith the Lord, to the sword, to the pestilence, and so on. You see, he answered them in kind. He drew back his hand. His hand had been stretched out still, but because of their wickedness, he drew it back. And so the land was bereft of its people. In Chronicles 36 we read that the children of Israel were taken into captivity, that the land should enjoy its Sabbaths. And they were in captivity 70 years. 70 years. 70 years of Sabbaths. 70 years of Sabbaths. Now if you take those Sabbaths as each year representing a Sabbath year of what should have been a 7-year cycle, that gives us 490 years, a suggestion that for 490 years they had not kept the seventh year or the Jubilee. Didn't it? The land was to enjoy its Sabbaths for 70 years because it hadn't been doing that. Now you take, go back from the end of the 70 years captivity, you can check me on this, I'm not very good at mathematics, but if you go back from the end of the 70 years captivity, 490 years, I think you'll find you come back to the days of Solomon. Remember his wives turned him away? They got a lot to answer for. Suggestion that from the time of Solomon, they had not kept the seventh year or the Jubilee. That's the sorry state that Israel had fallen into. So, had we have been there in Israel, we should look forward to that Jubilee coming, shouldn't we? Or 49 years away. But then it's 40, then 30, then 20, then 10. So it gets nearer. The Jubilee. When we can go back to our lands. We're free and can return to our lands. It came. But it went. just as the Sabbath day passed, just as the seventh year passed, so the Jubilee passed. And the first year of the next cycle came. And again they find themselves back in square one. Would release never come? You see the harsh realities of life pandering to the flesh, and the ways of the flesh would hit them again, and the problems of the last 49 years would just raise their heads again for the next generation. And you see, for most of us, well, I say most of us, but for many of us here, we should never see another 49 years, would it? Our 49 years are gone for many of us here tonight. Some would see two jubilees in the course of their life, not many, but a few. But for many of us, it would be just one jubilee in the course of a life. If you've been in Israel, just one jubilee in the course of your life. How you'd look forward to it coming, so you could go back to your land. But when it's gone, you'll never see another one. So with poor harvest, bad husbandry, poverty, sell the land, the same old cycle, back into slavery. And it became evident then that the Jubilee was not a completion of the cycle. Like the Sabbath and like the seventh year, it pointed so forward to an ultimate release, a greater one that was yet to come. Would that final Jubilee ever come? But even then, if the Lord removed the curse altogether from off the land, so that the land brought forth abundantly, the curse was still upon them. They still died. If the Lord brought forth fruit to wonderful abundance, they'd still perish themselves. There was no end to that. Would there ever be a release from death? And so the cycles went by. Sabbaths, seventh years, jubilees, came and went. Until one day, on one Sabbath day, a young man went into the synagogue, one might almost say a back street synagogue, in a back street village, a back street Galilee. And he stood up to read. And they gave him the scroll of the prophet Isaiah. And he unrolled the scroll, and he found a certain place. And when he found it, he began to read. I put it for you that those who listen very carefully as he read heard the trumpet of the Jubilee.